racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Welcome to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf. And boy, do we have an action-packed show today with Jim Nantz, Steve Timms from the Houston Open, and our Vertical Groove Hotline with Alex Maselli. Hi, I'm Bob Bupka, here with Jay Randolph Jr., better known as STL Golf Geek. Jay, I'm tired already.
Man, and we got another big week. We're going to get to Bubba Watson's win in a moment, but first we want to welcome in Steve Timms, the tournament director of the Houston Open and the CEO of one of the finest golf associations going, the Houston Golf Association. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Jay.
You know, first off, Bob, I know that you want to talk a little bit about the battle through Harvey.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. When I came out to the golf course, quite frankly, I didn't know what to expect. I know the devastation that has taken place here in Houston, but boy, your people have done a marvelous job. I was on the property and I kept saying, what hurricane?
Yeah, Brian Buckner, the superintendent here at Golf Club of Houston, his whole team, just an amazing job, you know, just in the aftermath of Harvey cleaning up. And bear in mind that a lot of his crew, their families, their houses, their homes were affected by Hurricane Harvey, which the entire region was. And for them to come up, and they had volunteers out here getting things cleaned up, and then the condition of the golf course, they redid all the bunkers. The condition of the golf course is amazing, as it is every year.
And, of course, Steve, amazing field. I just looked over the full player field. You have to be awfully proud, and it says a lot right from the top where you are, and I know you don't like taking credit, but you deserve it. The players have grown to really respect this event. They like the golf course. Great job by Reese Jones, of course, and getting him ready for the Masters. But you know, this is such a great event, and talk about a little bit about the pride that you have in the quality of this field.
Yeah, it's very gratifying just for our entire team, all of our volunteers, that are all members of the Houston Golf Association and volunteering their time and take so much pride in how they put this event on, from, you know, people driving shuttle carts to all the other folks. And you know, we've created something special here in Houston. Houston's got a rich history of golf. Since 1946 we've been conducting professional golf tournaments, and you know, Phil Mickelson, can't say enough about him. He's been one of the guys, I think this is his 11th or 12th year in a row to play with us, and playing the week before the Masters, and he's a thought leader in a lot of respects, and a lot of these guys are, you know, he's told them a lot of positive things about it. So you know, to have Jordan Spieth back, lost in a playoff a couple years ago and then went on to win the Masters tournament, so you know, all these guys, they like coming to Houston. We try to, like every tournament, treat them well, treat them with respect, and pay particular attention to the fact that they are here competing in a championship. And because we are a golf association, I think that kind of makes it special for us.
Well, and Bob, as we talked about last week on the show, you cannot recreate Augusta National. But I know that the agronomy side and all the things that Steve puts into it, that they try and do the best job to be a preparation for the Masters. I know that's one of the things that you guys try and sell to the players, Steve.
Yeah, there's no question about that, Jay. And you know, it's a delicate balance there. I mean, you go to a superintendent and say, hey, I'd like for you to emulate Augusta National, and he looks at you like he wondered which planet you came from. But, you know, it's really just to create similar conditions, similar shot-making conditions with light rough and firmness, and runoff areas around the green complexes. So that's really the fundamental of it. I mean, we're at sea level, so we don't pretend to be anything like that. But, you know, for guys that want to play their way into the first major, we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to provide them with that competitive environment.
Hey, Steve, let me ask you. I know there's an active search underway for a new title sponsor. Anything you can share with us or anything on the horizon that you're excited about?
Well, this is a big week for us, Bob. We've got a lot of folks or several folks taking a look at us. And, you know, we're still in active conversations about the title sponsorship situation. I mean, the tour has been very supportive. Jay Monahan and his team, the commissioner, helping us, you know, with from a business development perspective. We felt like it was important for us to have an event this year, obviously, not only because we've got this steep history and we wanted to make that investment, but also because of the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. We want to showcase to the world that Houston is here. We're recovering and we're back in business. And what better platform to do that than the Houston Open and this worldwide television audience? And we're optimistic and we're determined that we're going to find a new title.
Well, and Bob, you know, I think it's important. I pointed out in our intro of Steve, not only is he a tournament director of a PGA tournament, and for a lot of guys I know, that's enough. He's also the CEO of the Houston Golf Association, one of the finest regional golf associations in America. Kind of let everybody know, because I'm not sure everybody exactly knows what a man in charge of a regional golf association does.
Sure. Well, our mission and purpose is really to promote golf at every level. And we've been in junior golf since 1957. We have the largest first tee chapter in the country, with 10 green grass locations. We're in 488 elementary schools,
wow,
total of 350,000 young people last calendar year that had the opportunity to be introduced to the game of golf through the first tee and junior golf. And we continue to support local charity. And I also should mention, we conduct amateur events, the amateur championships here in Houston. So, you know, that's a 52-week a year proposition, and you know, so we continue to show the effects and the benefits of, you know, our PGA Tour event throughout the year, and it's really about continuing to support our youth development programs and charity.
Well, the Grill Room wants to say thanks to Steve Timms for coming by. Best of luck in your pursuit of a new sponsor. I, for one, know that whoever that sponsor is going to be delighted being associated with this event, with you, and continued support of so many youngsters. 350,000 youngsters, Jay. That's simply incredible. Steve, thank you for your time. All right, Jay, time now to look back last week. A magnificent performance by Bubba Watson, winning for the second time this year, backing up the victory at Riviera with his victory at Austin Country Club in Austin, Texas. And before we even talk about Bubba, let's listen to what he had to say after that victory over Kevin Kisner.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. You know, you don't think about lists or anything. You just think about trophies and trying to win. And, you know, having two majors and now having two World Golf Championships are the closest things to majors. You know, I mean, you're talking about the top in the world. We're here this week. So what an honor and a privilege and an overwhelming sensation to know that I have a trophy, another trophy at the house. Yeah, every golf tournament you need luck. Every time you play golf. We battle so hard and you get tired, you know, you're showing emotion. If you don't show emotion, you know, there's so many things. What are you battling mentally? I can't speak for everybody, but for me personally, you're battling the emotions and trying to focus on what you're doing. And this week it went in my favor. The luck went in my favor. I thought it was good. You know, my putting was good. And then the confidence, you know, being healthy and strong, confidence coming back. I saw that this week, saw some good shots and, my focus was where I needed it to be. There was about four or five shots that I came off my hinges a little bit and didn't give 100% to it. You know, my focus was out somewhere else. So that was not bad over 100 plus holes.
So let me ask you this, Jay. Is it harder for golf fans to recognize the genius that is Bubba Watson because it's such an unconventional manner in which he swings that golf club?
Yes, Bob, I believe so. I think the golf geeks get it. And as he was talking, And I started thinking about how he was so emotional with his 10th win when he won that earlier this year. And now this is number 11, and he set it two majors. I mean, he's a heartbeat away from the Hall of Fame, Bubba Watson. And he's already, I could have got him at 55 to one when I was out in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and now he's 20 to 25 to one. And we know that when he's right, he owns Augusta. And Bob, you know very well, in a match play format, when you play a guy like Bubba Watson, who has the potential to outdrive you by 40 or 50 yards and has this kind of unconventional way about it, you get very frustrated.
Now, you bring up a good point there, Jay. One of the valuable lessons that I had been taught, and I'm sure you utilized it in your brilliant amateur career, you really don't want to watch your opponent. You know, you'll accept his shot, but you don't want to focus on him. And I think you have to double down on that advice when playing against Bubba Watson. I mean, you stand on the tee and watch him literally lift off both feet and hit the golf ball well over 300 yards. It'd be pretty easy for you to say, golly, how is he doing that? And whenever you're doing that, you're losing focus on your own game.
And I don't think it would have mattered. You know, the guy that played so well again this year was Alex Noren. And he kind of faltered down the stretch. Kisner was able to take care of business and win finally in the playoff. And I don't think it would have mattered if Noren was in the final against Bubba. Bubba just took over in the final match. There were a number of things that came out of it. You know, you talked last week about this unique facility, Austin Country Club. I love the golf course. I think it's a tremendous match play golf course. We got to talk a little bit about Spieth, and very disappointed in Dustin Johnson, and maybe even more disappointed in Rombo. But I got to remember, it's match play. John Rahm looked like he didn't want to be there.
Well, you know, when you get off to poor starts, it's hard to maintain that enthusiasm, highlighted by the fact that, you know, Augusta National looming right around the corner, and you can lose your focus. One thing I want to revisit, Jay, on the Grill Room last week, we had a difference of opinion. You were in favor of the pod system. I was in favor of the single elimination, where, you know, 64 guys teed it up on Wednesday, only 32 survived. Do you still feel the same way after watching this edition?
Not necessarily. I will tell you that I you know, as you said, if you lose the first match and then have the second match, and you see guys, the third day means absolutely nothing. I think some guys would much rather say, yeah, give me that shot in 1 through 64. If I lose, I lose. I go home or I get ready for Houston. I don't know. Because there, as we've talked about, the theory was that this would be better for TV. I don't think that's the case. I it may be for the first couple of days, but I don't think it has any effect on what happens Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, I think now that we have more potential winners, you know, and more guys that, you know, that have name recognition. I don't think the you know, dangers of TV getting a couple of unknowns playing it off on Sunday still exists. Kevin,
you know, Bob, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I do want to say this. We both know about the Western Amateur, and we know about the U.S. Amateur, where you qualify to get into match play. Now, you know, there's nothing wrong with having these guys come in Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, play 54 holes of metal, and the top 16 get to move forward for the big dough, and everybody 17 through 64 gets a fairly good check worth flying in for, and you know, you got them for the 3 days at least. I don't know. I just think that, you know, it's so tough. They tried it back in the day with the old Seiko Tucson match play, and it just didn't seem to catch on.
Well, you bring up a good point there. I kind of like the prospects of maybe metal play to start with and then go to that top 16 on Saturday. It certainly would make Saturday and Sunday very exciting.
Bob, you know, we were talking to our man Steve Timms earlier in the show about Jordan Spieth playing this week. He really struggled with the putter in Austin, and he had a lot of, you know, there were a lot of people there watching him. It's where he used to play once or twice a week when he was in college at the University of Texas. Any scuttlebutt early this week in Houston, or is it just the putter?
Well, that's the impression we got when we were leaving Austin. We did find out at the Austin Country Club, Jordan disclosed to us that he had some mono the past few months. He did look, you know, a few pounds lighter. I mean, you know, for Jordan Spieth, you know, a few pounds means a lot. I mean, I dropped 20 and nobody's even going to say anything. You know,
from your belly to your fanny is where you're dropping 20. Yeah,
that's for sure. Or my wallet if I'm in a casino. But anyway, you know, Jordan Spieth is, you know, it's a tough lesson. Jay, as long as you've been around this game and your dad with how he played at the highest level, I still contend that there's something very mysterious about golf, because when you're playing well, you absolutely think this is the easiest game in the world. And when you're not playing well, you swear it's the hardest game in the world. And I think right now, Jordan Spieth is going through the segment of thinking, man, this game is hard.
Absolutely. And he made it look so easy. You know, he's almost driven. If you look at putts from 5 to 10 feet, or maybe even 4 to 8, a little over 4 to 8 feet, when he's draining those, that's when he starts making those 25 footers out of nowhere that look like they're tap ins to him. It'll be very interesting this week to see how he plays playing the week before a major. We talked to Steve Timms earlier, the tournament director, about how they try and get the greens as quick as they can. And it is a very good field, Bob. And we know we've seen Mickelson playing well, and he likes to play the week before a major.
Yeah, he does. Certainly he has that Masters on his mind. I mean, he would dearly love to win the Masters. The question I throw up to you, Jay, would it enhance Phil Mickelson's chances of winning the U.S. Open by winning the Masters or by not winning the Masters?
Oh, my. That's a tough one. I mean, you'd have to think, if anything, it might be a negative because of all the press and publicity of it. But this is Phil Mickelson. So I don't know. But, man, that's a great question. You know, if Phil gets to 18 and he has to make birdie to get into a playoff, I mean, I don't think he's going to miss it on purpose. I'll put it to you that way. But that's a great question. And Bob, you mentioned the Masters. Kudos once again to this organization as they released last week every final round of the Masters on YouTube. It's hard to believe as a golf geek, I could go back to 1968 and see my dad on the call at 14 at Augusta with Byron Nelson on CBS Sports and just dial it up for free and watch it on my computer. So thanks to the Masters for putting all of the final rounds, including Jack in 86 and Tiger 97, all of them, since 1968 for free on YouTube.
Yeah, that really is incredible to anybody that loves golf, and so many people have a different favorite Masters. Certainly probably the one that comes to the top of the list on most people's list would be that 86 Masters. And ironically enough, later on in the show, we had an opportunity to sit down with Jim Nantz, and that was his first Masters tournament behind the mic for CBS, and it's great what Ken Venturi said to Jim Nantz right after that Masters got over. You'll hear that later on in the Grill Room. Right now, you are listening to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the big 550 AM in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, TalkSport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or even better, you can just ask your smart speaker, Alexa, to play the Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
And Bob, when we return, we'll go to our Vertical Groove Hotline and the LPGA's first major of the year, the ANA Inspiration.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par three as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready.
Welcome back to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. This is Jay Randolph Jr. along with my man Bob Bupka, the VOG, the voice of golf. And let's go to the Vertical Groove Hotline.
Time now in The Grill Room to bring in the founder and publisher of Morning Read, golf's fastest growing source for everything golf. His name is Alex Maselli. He's being brought to you by Vertical Groove Golf, the new way to hit it further and straighter, using a vertical groove piece of equipment. Alex, I want to talk to you first about Michelle Wee, the importance, the LPGA first major of the year for them. How important is Michelle Wee to the LPGA Tour, you know, to keep gaining traction?
Well, I think there's a couple of things about that, Bob. First of all, she's a name player. It doesn't matter that she's an American player. She's a name player. She brings interest levels from all different viewpoints on the LPGA Tour. I mean, if Paula Creamer was playing like Michelle Wee, I think she could bring some of that as well. But because of Michelle's history going way back, and we both covered her when she actually played on PGA Tour events, she's always been a lightning rod, which is great. You know, you want that to happen, and you want a lightning rod that actually plays well, which she's starting to do as well. I think also because she has an Asian heritage, there's a lot of interest in Korea and parts of Asia. So she kind of bridges every gap that the LPGA wants. And so, she's got a lot of energy behind her. She's still young. She's interesting. She's fun. She's compelling. She's won a major. She's got all the things that you want if you're trying to market the LPGA Tour. So I think in that way, it's important. Does she have to win? I think she has to play well. I think if she plays well, it's going to be good enough. I mean, we've seen with Tiger, playing well has been good enough. He hasn't had to win yet.
All right, I want to direct your attention for a moment to Lydia Ko. At such a young age, I have watched her firsthand change coaches, change caddies, change equipment. Can Lydia Ko, once again dominate this game, or is she just in a fog?
Well, I think that's really up to Lydia Ko. I think clearly she's been probably advised poorly. She's done a lot of things that you wouldn't expect a player of her caliber to do. And I think she has to kind of step back as a young woman, step back, look at her game and say, what am I trying to do here? I know what it takes to win at this level. I know what it takes to be the best player at this level. Why am I now trying to do something different? And it happens with a lot of players. They think that, oh, I need to get to that next level, that next step. You could talk to Payne Stewart if he was still alive. He'd tell you he's made these mistakes. Lee Westwood, I know, has made these mistakes after he got the world number one, thinking there was something else. There's not something else. Sometimes it's exactly where you are. You just got to continue to maintain. And so I think Lydia Ko needs to step back, take a look, and determine if she wants to be the player she was or if she wants to continue to do what she's doing, which is kind of fumbling around trying to figure it out. She doesn't need to fumble around and figure it out. She already figured it out before. Just go back to where you were.
One last thing before we let you go, and we're talking to Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read. Tiger make the cut at Augusta.
Yes. I don't think there's any question, Bob, that he's certainly playing well enough to make the cut. Now, the next question you should be asking me, and that's unfortunate, I have to ask myself, does Tiger win at Augusta? And the answer is no. And I think he's shown that he's certainly got the game to make the cut. There's only 86 guys, Bob. I mean, if he had a broken leg, he'd find a way to make the cut. The problem is can he get through four rounds? Can he be competitive in all four rounds? Can he not make the mistakes that he's made in almost every golf tournament I've seen him play in? And the answer is no.
Well, I'm going to give you one more week to think about that. We'll ask you that same question next week as we knock on the door to the first major of the year. Alex Maselli, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you at Augusta.
All right, Bobby.
Well, Alex thinks he can make the cut. Well, Alex didn't think he should play at Riviera, and so far things have gone okay. Bob, it's just building. This is a big week. You're there in Houston, right near your home area there, and it's big. But, I mean, next week, I'm jealous you and Janice are going to be down there. It's going to be wild. I mean, so many players. It's like this collision course.
Well, good point, Jay. And you and I had the pleasure of attending several Masters together, and I know what it means to you. Your dad, such a big part of the early telecast on CBS television. By the way, next time you see your dad, tell him the Grill Room's asking for him. Really a legendary broadcaster, and it's been great fun working with you, Jay, but you're right about next week. I mean, it is starting to bubble, and it's only going to intensify. We get there early in the week. We can't get there soon enough with all the commitments that we have to try and fulfill. But so many storylines, and certainly a little gasoline poured on the fire by the performance of Bubba Watson at Austin.
No question. I mean, there's one of the favorites. Rory McIlroy going for the Grand Slam and the way he's played. Justin Thomas. Even Jordan Spieth, who's struggling. Phil Mickelson. On and on you go. I mean, John Rahm, Dustin Johnson. Dustin, who couldn't make the bell last year because of the accident. And Tiger Woods is going to be at the Masters.
I mean, just saying that you just drove the price of tickets up at least $100 every day because you mentioned his name. I mean, it is going to be wild on Washington Road down there with people trying to get tickets. The excitement. It's still one of the more fascinating sights in all of golf. There'll be 70, 75,000 spectators, as you know, Jay, on the grounds Wednesday. We'll show up for that opening bell on Thursday. There'll only be 25,000 spectators. I've said it before, but I think it's worth repeating. It's the only sporting event that I know of where far more people attend practice than the actual competition.
You are listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, TalkSport 2, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected. When we return, as Bob mentioned, the man who first called the Masters or was on the Masters in 1986... Jim Nantz, broadcast legend, next on The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Group Golf.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
The Grill Room is thrilled to support the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and all superintendents doing great work for the game we all love. In fact, we call them the unsung heroes in golf. Here's what two-time major winner Jordan Spieth has to say.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to The Grill Room.
Joining me now, somebody that I've known for a long time, truly admired and respect his work, Jim Nance. Jim, you know, in preparation for another Masters coming up, I can't help but think of going back to 1986, and you were there, you finished, Jack won, and then Ken Venturi said something to you that so many years later, it still rings true. Could you share that?
Well, he said, I can tell you one thing, young man. He said, you may be lucky enough one day, fortunate enough, to say, I worked 50 Masters tournaments, but I can promise you one thing. You'll never live to see a greater day than this around Augusta National. So I was so honored that Ken thought I had enough ability to maybe one day reach that outrageous number of 50, because this was just my first. I was hoping just to be invited back for the second year. But for him then to, on top of it, say, though, it's never going to be any better than this, I thought, man, it's all downhill after this. But it was an epic day and one of the great days in the history of the game. And, yes, there have been many more great stories at Augusta. I'm not sure anything's ever topped 86. But this is going to be my 33rd Masters now coming up. So I'm basically two-thirds of the way to what Ken predicted back in 1986.
You know, it's amazing when we look back in broadcast history, only two men ever broadcast the Masters, the NCAA Championship, and the Super Bowl. You share that honor with Brett Musburger. I mean, it's really remarkable when you think about it.
Well, it's to me, they're the three events that always meant the most. The Super Bowl speaks for itself. College basketball's championship, which this will be my 33rd Final Four this year as well, just having finished my 33rd. And now the Masters, I mean, I count my blessings. I've had, because we broadcast the Super Bowl every third year, and we'll have it next year in Atlanta. So I've had six times through where I've had both the all three, the Super Bowl, the Final Four, and the Masters in the same year.
You know, a little bit about Jim's background. Quite an accomplished basketball player, co-captain on his high school team.
Wait a minute, Bob. That basketball team, my varsity career record was 2-42. Okay, yeah, I was the co-captain coming off an 0-22 junior year. I rebounded strongly my senior year to go 2-20. For a combined 2-42. So anyway, proceed before you set me up as this great legendary basketball player.
Well, he makes the transition, opts to go to the University of Houston, the best golf college in the country at the time.
Yes, it was.
Alongside of some names our listeners probably heard of, Jim McClain, Blaine McAllister, and then, of course, your favorite, Fred Couples.
Well, you know, we had just a dream group in college. Blaine and I roomed together all through school. Freddie was in our four-person suite. And Sunday, before the final round of the Masters, we're looking back at Fred's 1992 victory here at Augusta. It's called Jim Nance Remembers Augusta, Fred Couples at the Masters. And it's been so much fun the last few months stitching and putting that documentary together. It's a lot of heartfelt emotion. We've got all the guys back from Seattle, where Freddie grew up, who at a round table talk about what he was like as a young boy growing up in the inner city of Seattle. And then I've got my group from the University of Houston at a round table. We taped back in January at Phoenix, and the guys didn't know it. After we finished it, I said to them at the end, if Freddie were here right now, what would you say to him about the friendship, what it's meant to you? And after they all gave very touching answers, I said, well, why don't you tell that to him, to his face? And with that, Fred walked up from behind and was there to surprise them all. This wonderful reunion now broke out, and it was just part of the magic, really, that's, I think, going to come out on this show before the final round of the Masters on CBS.
Talking with Jim Nance, and, you know, what I realized quite a while ago, actually, that, you know, the major events, even the Super Bowl, the NCAA championships, even the World Series, no other sport has such a dignified area where the winning trophy is presented. I mean, Butler Cabin, where the jacket is transferred to the winner, is a magical place.
It is, and you're right. It's a standalone event. There's no other event in sport that has a setting like that. Now, of course, in this day and age of social media, they're going to have, you know, a lot of people want to voice their opinion on any topic. So there are going to be those out there who want to be snarky about the Butler cabin ceremony. But being a traditionalist, and you expressed it better than I'm capable of, but I think there is something that's magical about having that time-honored tradition on Sunday around 7 o'clock Eastern time to welcome the new champion as a Masters winner. You know, they welcome him into the club. The club does, and it's a very special part of a week that is really one of its hallmarks is the word tradition, and that's one of the great ones, Lance.
Many of our listeners, they're going to say that Jim Nance has a dream job. Well, he also qualifies in another category. He has a dream home. Where is it located? It's at Pebble Beach. What does he have in his backyard? He has the seventh hole, the par three, from Pebble Beach in his backyard. That's what I call a dream home.
I feel just being able to reside in Pebble Beach on a full-time basis, it truly was a calling or a dream. I obsessed about it for years. I used to live in the East Bay area as a young boy. Not for long. My dad was transferred around the country climbing the corporate ladder, but I first saw Pebble, first laid eyes on it when I was 10, and I knew that there was some sort of connection, if that's possible, especially when Frank Trikanian brought me back. Wow. I remember this place. I want to live here one day. So I was fortunate enough to go ahead and make that decision and move from the East Coast, and I've never regretted it for a minute. You know, sometimes when you have something build up in your head as an expectation, it's hard for it to ever match what you thought it was going to be like. So, uprooting and moving that far away to the other coast, and sure, I've visited there countless times, but never got into the rhythm and flow in the past as a visitor of what it's like to live there. So I look at it now and think, wow, that was really kind of a risky thing. But now that I live there, man, it is far exceeded my wildest expectations. There are not many of us who live there full-time. A lot of people have second homes there. But we have a couple of young children who are going to go to school there, going to be raised there. We're happy. It's quiet. It's a little bit of a drop-out-of-the-world experience. And, you know, it's a golf mecca. And I like being around golf, whether I'm playing it or not. There's something that feels good about being at Pebble Beach. Everybody that ever steps foot there says, wow, this is like a spiritual experience. And it is for me. You know, it runs deep in my heart being there. I really do. Every time I pull through the Highway 1 gate into Pebble Beach, I pinch myself and think, I really did. I dreamt it, and I still can't believe it in a lot of ways. I count my blessings.
Jim Nance, your depth of talent is only exceeded by your kindness. Thank you for your time.
It's been a long time. We've done it many times. It's always great to see you and Janice out here on the tour. Thank you, my friend, for being such a great ambassador for all things golf and PGA Tour. You got a lot of friends out here and a lot of people who really trust you, and that's why everyone, they've known you and respected you and called you a friend. Thank you.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, a big thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.